We have a special guest on the phone with us. John Erb is a fur bearer and wolf research scientist with the Minnesota DNR. And I believe it's the first time you've been with us. Thank you so much, John, for coming on the air.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. So we've had some actually requests from listeners. We're kind of in the middle of another difficult winter as far as snow. It's definitely colder than last winter. But just we've had a lot of really interesting conditions over winter. And I know I'm wondering, and I think others are wondering too, like, just how exactly this is affecting wildlife. And I think you are a fur bearer and wolf specialist, so maybe the big mammals. But should we just start by talking about, like, what kind of things do you study, and how big a deal is the seasonal erraticness that comes with climate change?
Yeah, so I work with a pretty wide range of species, from on the very small end are small weasels, short-tailed weasels, long-tailed weasels, all the way up on the large end to wolves, bobcats, wolves, coyotes, things like that. So there's probably over 20 species that, in one fashion or another, I try and do my best to keep tabs on. And so my job is mostly focused on monitoring and research for these species. It's a fun but challenging task with that many species out there. And
yeah.
In general, most wildlife species are adapted to change and fluctuations. If they weren't, if they weren't very good at that, they probably wouldn't exist on the planet today. So there's
right.
been obviously massive changes. But, sometimes it's more about the speed of which those changes occur, whether a species is already at the edge of its range in Minnesota or right in the center, so it really can have differing impacts on species when we get these new changes coming their way. So, the details really do matter.
Yeah.
It's easy to kind of make general statements about climate change is going to be, positive or negative for certain species, but the details will matter. Even if you take just a normal change in weather, how it'll impact a species could vary depending upon, whether you're on the North Shore or in more in the deep woods, interior part of northeast Minnesota, because, there's lake effect, things that are different.
Right.
So there will be variability for species. And certainly overall, climate change is projected to not be real good for some species, and there's others that probably will benefit some from it. So,
yeah. Have you seen a change in what is actually here, depending on what's migrating north or what's migrating from the south?
So far, we haven't really seen any kind of change in Minnesota in terms of just the list of species that are here. Their ranges have changed for some of them a little bit. But, if you get further south, like into, I'm not sure even where the line is now, but, some states that have never had armadillos are now seeing armadillos maybe in Missouri or Kansas. But so far in Minnesota, we really don't have any new species, fur bearer species anyway, that have showed up. Possums historically were probably only in the very southeast tip of Minnesota, and now they're, quite a ways up towards central Minnesota. That's not simply because of climate change probably, although that's undoubtedly played some role. So, but for the most part, we have the same group of species we had, a couple hundred years ago for fur bearers anyway.
Okay. And so a few things that I've thought about specifically, snowshoe hares. I have seen snowshoe hare in recent years where it's brown, there's no snow, but the snowshoe hare has turned. And I'm assuming once they turn, they can't really turn back. Is that the kind of thing that over the years it will, do you think that that's going to be a change, an adaptation that they are able to do? Or I don't even know how that works with snowshoe hares. What dictates the change in their shedding and their taking on the white hair?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting one. And the same could be said for our weasels that turn white in winter as well. There's certainly a lot of people speculating. There's been some research showing that, more mismatch in color in those hares does affect their survival some in some areas. Some research has been done out west. You know, it's mostly, you know, there's some genetic hardwiring as there is with most traits, but then of course there's some plasticity in terms of when they turn white in a given winter, you know, based on temperatures and daylight. But if I recall, some of the research shows there's not a lot of plasticity in that within a year. So they can't just, oh, there's no snow yet, I'm going to wait 3 weeks
right.
to turn. You know, there's some, maybe a little bit of variability there that's driven by temperatures or daylight, as there is with, you know, mammal fur priming in general. But, you know, my view on this topic is that it's undoubtedly going to have some effect on survival if we do have these shortened winters on the front and the back end when the hares may have a little more color mismatch. I'm not yet convinced it's going to be a big factor in mm-hmm. long-term populations. I'm perhaps more worried about other things related to forest mm-hmm. conditions and such. But, you know, what usually happens, I mean, it's not like before climate change, you know, we always got our first snow on November 6th
right.
or something. So for eons, again, there's always been variability in when that snow comes and stays. It may be that it's moved up, you know, quite a bit more now. But variability is not inherently something a species can't deal with.
Right.
Usually systems would manage that through natural selection. So there's always probably some hares that turn white a little sooner than others through, you know, genetic, just like with humans, there's variability in our traits.
Right.
And so natural selection in the form of, say, predation often is what takes care of those early color turners,
right.
You know, so, and so over time, the population genetics can evolve to where it's not as much of a concern again. So I believe, you know, for a while anyway, I don't have big concerns that, you know, hares can deal with changing snow conditions on the front back end. If we get major extremes that happen rapidly, if all of a sudden our first snowfalls are not consistently anyway, not until, you know, Christmas, things like that can start to have bigger impacts. If it's, you know, shorter things, week or two here, one year's good, one year's bad, I think the populations can, you know, handle that or evolve, adapt to those changes. So I think the magnitude of the change and how fast it occurs will determine whether it really plays out to be a big deal or not.
Yeah. Have you witnessed or do you have any notable observations or stories about things, adaptations that are happening?
That's a good question I didn't think about. There's not actually anything that comes right to my mind right now.
Okay.
I think most things are more likely subtle,
yeah.
subtle changes in behavior. And I still think for a lot of species, you know, behavioral changes related to species composition changes, you know, there's that's going on and has been going on. We have more bobcats in northern Minnesota
right.
now than we did 20, 30 years ago. It's not simply because of climate change. In fact, I'm not yet convinced much of it is because of that. I think that relates more to our changes in the forest age structure, but certainly species are changing in abundance and distribution some for a number of different reasons. And, you know, that forces changes in activity patterns. Animals that maybe used to be able to be active whenever they want have to adjust the habitats or the times of day they're active to avoid competitors. So I think that kind of stuff is always going on as species, you know, see
yeah.
ups and downs in their numbers. So, but there's not any one adaptation that comes to my mind for fur bears that I think is directly tied to climate change that I can say I've seen yet.
And then climate change does affect the forest, as you said. So I guess I'm guessing it's actually quite hard to pick out single causes of anything because everything is changing at the same time and at completely varying rates, as you say. I mean, things that I wonder about are things like bears' hibernation patterns or mice that used to make all these tunnels under the snow, you know, I mean, it, in a way you can look at humans and I'm actually amazed at how fast we have adapted and gotten used to the rain through the winter kind of things. But then I think, well, but we also have, you know, we have heat, we have clothing, we have just a lot of ways that we can adapt that other wildlife doesn't necessarily have. So it's just, it's really interesting to hear you talk about it, and in a way reassuring that, you know, there's always been a huge amount of variability and they have always needed to adapt. Here's another quick adaptation question I'm wondering about. In the cities, you know, we have streetlights at night, and there's been a phase, hopefully not lasting very long, but these really bright blue LED lights as streetlights. We had one in our alley recently. Luckily, we managed to get it turned off, but it just, you know, put a blinding light on around everything. And it made me imagine it'd be almost impossible to have nocturnal habits around here. Do you have any insight as to the effect of that kind of thing on animals, or any noteworthy discussion of nocturnal behavior?
You know, not a lot, but one thing that comes to my mind, and it's not necessarily tied to, you know, city related lighting, but, you know, I think there are studies that have shown that, you know, on bright nights, whether that's just full moon, no clouds, or a nice white snowy background too, that certainly can affect predation rates on, say, that whether it's small mammals or snowshoe hares. You know, when mm-hmm. when it's easier to be seen, you're more vulnerable to predation, and that certainly, for the smaller critters anyway, and that certainly can impact your movements, your habitat use at that time of night. And so certainly night lighting plays a role in the dynamics of a lot of these species. But again, you know, the city light angle, that's not affecting a large percentage of the overall wildlife population. When you know, you get a mile or whatever away from a small, medium town, you're back to just nature's light. And those things have been happening, you know, bright nights and dark nights have been happening for a long time. So yes, definitely can influence behavior, even survival, but maybe not any kind of a big concern at a big scale.
Yeah. Right. I think it's just, if you're in town, I guess part of it is that we're just really lucky to live in an area where you can get out of town and get away from the bright human-made lights and into more natural territory. I'm speaking with John Erb. He is a fur bear and wolf research scientist with the Minnesota DNR. John, it's really fun to have you on and talking about these things. In some ways, it's really nice to hear reminders of, you know, that this has always been the case, and, you know, it takes time for these things to change, and it should take time. Is there anything that you'd like to add about adaptation or anything else this morning?
Yeah, well, I want to clarify a little bit. I don't mean to be trying to sound too optimistic about things either.
Yeah.
It's certainly the case. I mean, I like to be optimistic, but
right.
I mean, it's certainly the case that if some of the changes over a period of time play out as some of the predictions suggest, for example, say the boreal forest largely recedes from Minnesota, that will certainly have notable impacts. You know, species like marten and lynx and perhaps moose, you know, they're going to perhaps disappear from Minnesota. You know, the water volatility we're seeing, it might be more of an issue in some of central and southern Minnesota, but that drought, then floods, and all this volatility that we've definitely documented, you know, changes over the last decade or two in these extreme weather events, water events, those are going to have impacts on what are currently very common species like muskrats, you know. So I think there's certainly, you know, reason to be concerned for a variety of species. I just happen to be one of my themes in my mind is we have to be really careful with predictions. It is very complicated to understand whether animals might adapt, how they might adapt, how species might adjust, you know, in their interactions. If we now have bobcats in areas we didn't, well, maybe that affects the abundance of a species to a degree, but they find ways to coexist, maybe at different, you know, reduced densities in some cases. But so I think there's just a lot of uncertainty. I think some of the, you mentioned earlier, small mammals like rodents, they're actually one that I have quite a bit of concern on in northern Minnesota. And we actually have some data that suggests some small mammal populations have been declining. And they're a very important prey species for a lot of carnivores that I work with. And so that lack of snow, more compacted snow, is probably going to have even a greater impact on some smaller species like that. You know, if they really depend on that for thermal protection in winter. And if we're not getting snowpack, you know, they're more impacted by those temperatures than, say, a larger mammal is. And so you know, there's certainly reason to be concerned for some species more than others. And on the flip side, some species are going to benefit.
Right.
There's no doubt. We'll see expansion of distributions or abundance in some species. So for fur bears overall, it's kind of a mixed story. And, you know, it's just difficult to predict. Even if we have some confidence of how climate is going to change, predicting ecological dynamics that stem from that is even much harder.
Yeah.
Even today, it's hard to understand how one species is going to affect another, or a warm winter might affect, you know, plant species. So,
right. So many complexities.
And humans are doing things like assisted migration with forest management. You know, there's mitigation that humans may do as well to try and offset some of these impacts. And that's has to be factored in to these discussions about long-term impacts. So I'm just leery about too many big predictions.
Right. Yes. And I don't mean to be asking you so much about predictions as about what you see happening already or what has been happening. And I think you've given a good snapshot of that. Thank you so much, John, for being with us here at KTWH, and would love to have you again sometime. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was John Erb, a fur bearer wolf research scientist with the Minnesota DNR.